Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
D-May, Svingen, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Gabe Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingen here with you on November 1st.
Woohoo!
I hope everybody had a wonderful and safe Halloween. I brought candy.
Take that home with you.
I'm putting it right in front of Derek.
No,
we'll
go put it in.
See how much he eats over the course of the program.
He does have a sweet tooth.
Go put it in the kitchen over there.
We didn't have any trick-or-treaters last night. We don't really live on the street with a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. So my wife and sister-in-law took my son to a busier street where he went trick-or-treating. But all of the candy that we purchased to give out, nobody came and took. So it's right here, and Derek claims he's not going to eat any. I don't believe it.
I'm not going to touch it. I can't touch it.
I won't believe it.
I can't stop. I got my own. I got one little itty-bitty Snicker right here.
Yes. Bite size.
Bite size. These are the best. The bite size one tastes the best. They're better than the bigger ones. I don't know why, but they just are.
Well, you can convince yourself that it's not so bad.
Exactly.
Because
absolutely,
it's not big. So you can eat three or four, and it's just like having one.
And that's why they made these.
Yes.
That's just why they made them. So you can buy a bag of them, eat them in one day, and then go back and get another bag.
I've never done the math. Is there a difference between fun size and bite size? is there some sort of measurement here that I'm not getting?
And why is bite size fun?
Yeah. I guess because you just toss it in your mouth.
Isn't a bigger one more fun?
I would think so.
So why is the...
Well, I guess because you could put more in your pocket.
Why is it fun?
Because you could put more in your pocket.
Why is it fun size?
Because you could put more in your pocket.
Really? Like, is that really...
You can grab a handful.
Or is that
just marketing?
So the Snickers that Derek has is fun size.
It's fun size or bite size?
Bite size is small. Okay, well, if that's fun size, then bite size is smaller than fun size.
Yeah, you got a point there. Yeah, this is fun size.
But do we really have any – like, who was the first to come up with that term, like, for marketing?
It's a marketing –
it's fun size.
Yeah. They're going to sell you the same candy bar,
candy company that
but three different iterations. They're going to sell you the infant one, and then it's the preteen one, which I have in my hand, and then it's the – adult one that, you know, as you start to get in those your years. And then they got the senior citizens one, the one that had the double Snickers in one pack.
They come pre-chewed for those who can't chew them themselves.
ABC.
I don't want that one. That one I do not want.
I feel like we're having a conversation talking about the imperial system versus the metric system. One's fun size, one's bite size. Either way, I hope that you had a wonderful Halloween.
Man. And speaking of that, there's one more just question from the past. Did you ever fall for the – would you like some ABC gum?
I'm sure I did.
I feel like in the first or second grade, I just got absolutely nailed.
I fell for the.
Want some ABC gum? And the person takes it right out of their mouth. And like,
I fell for the.
Oh, yeah, give me some ABC gum. That sounds great. That was me.
I fell for the Hertz donut. Do you want a Hertz donut?
Oh my goodness.
And then they punch you Hertz donut.
I think Terry Crisp got me on that a few times. And I was like 28 years old.
Hold on. Terry would be a guy that does that to you. And then punch you in the gut.
Yeah, because Canadians, when they say donut, that's how they say donut.
Oh,
anyway. Yeah.
Man.
Not sure if they sell Hertz donuts at Tim Hortons or not. We'll see. But it was only fitting that the Edmonton Oilers were in Nashville on Halloween night, considering Leon Draisaitl has terrorized the Predators for years. The Oilers win last night 5-1. Leon Draisaitl, 2 goals, 1 assist. He has 41 points in his past 16 games against the Predators, 25 goals, and 16 assists. In that span, that includes 17 goals and 25 points in 9 games at Bridgestone Arena. So the Oilers, without Connor McDavid, come to Nashville, whoop up on the Predators, who have lost 7 of 10 games to start the season, 3-6-1. And a couple of weeks ago, I gave you Predators fans out there permission to panic after the Predators started 0-5-0, because NHL history suggests that teams that start a season with 0 standings points through 5 games, more often than not, don't make the playoffs. And we had Elliot Freeman on our program yesterday, and Elliot keeps track of this stat about where teams sit in the playoff standings on November 1st. And I saw an article in the Boston Globe talking about this. The Predators, at this point, they have 7 points. They are 4 points behind the second wild card team in the Western Conference. That's the Calgary Flames. They have 11 points. According to the Boston Globe, since 2013-14, when the NHL introduced its wild card format, 14 of 176 teams that were at least 4 points out wound up making the playoffs, or just shy of 8%. So I think that it's only been 10 games, but I feel like there's only so much of the, well, it's only been X amount of games we can go until we need to sound some sort of alarm. But the Predators, quite frankly, have looked uncompetitive in most of the games they've played this season. It was evident, Willie. And by the way,
I would disagree with that. But last night, they were uncompetitive. Mm-hmm. Last night was the worst game of the season by far.
Well, let me rephrase. I believe there has only been one game this season where the Predators have been at their best for 60 minutes. And that was the win against
the
Bruins.
I agree with.
Let me rephrase. There has been one game this season where they have been at their best from start to finish. And that was the win against the Bruins for their first win of the season. I had the distinct pleasure last night of sitting next to Willie Donick on press row because he was not calling the game. I missed out on a golden opportunity to live stream Willie watching the game. Willie Uncensored. Could have made a couple of extra bucks for a subscription service to watch Willie watch the game without being on television. It was very entertaining. But last night, from the opening faceoff, they win the faceoff. Leon Draisaitl wins the faceoff. Matthias Ekholm gets the puck, fires it on net, and for 35 seconds, the Predators could not get out of their own zone. Victor Arvidsson, our old friend, scores his first goal as a member of the Edmonton Oilers, and the tone was set from the jump, and it only got worse from there. But, you know, I'm concerned about these Nashville Predators. I did not expect them to be where they are in the standings after 10 games.
Well, let me say something real quick. Yeah, they didn't play a good game, and I'm watching it in frustration, and it's really frustrating watching it on a small computer because I couldn't get it on my television. So I'll be glad when you're back in the booth, Willie, so we can watch it on FanDuel. Please, hurry up.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night. So, but they had chances. They had chances last night, and they just didn't capitalize on them. They had, like, point-blank opportunities last night to score goals, and they just didn't do it. So I don't think was that the first period or the second period? It was one of two where they spent a lot of time at the opposite end of the ice, and they just couldn't get a goal. Actually, it might have been the second period. Cause it
second
was after,
period.
Yeah, it was after the first goal by Forsberg. And I was just hoping, like, I caught a hat trick, and Forsberg got the first goal. Please let him get two more. But they had their chances
in the second period.
Yeah,
I thought
they just didn't capitalize.
But it's not. They're nowhere close to where they need to be right now. That was a step back. Mm-hmm. I think they had battled back. You know, since Adam gave everybody the opportunity to panic, and I said at the time, look, you do whatever you need to do. Right? This is a marathon, and if you care about the team, mm-hmm. it's your right to, you know, lean into it. You can panic. You can be that person that they do better when I don't watch them. You know, there's any number of things that we do as crazy followers of a team mm-hmm. to get through. Like, you throw stuff at the TV, or, you know, you're super over positive when they're not doing well, whatever it is. But last night, they had to be discouraged, because I didn't think the Oilers were that great last night. I didn't even think Draisaitl was that great. He made a couple of great plays, but he didn't dominate the game like he has in some of these past nightmares that they've had against him. They just gave the Oilers a nice, easy ride through Nashville, and here's your 2 points right from the get-go. It just, there wasn't the battle level. There wasn't the cohesiveness that they're looking for. A lot of the things that have been things that they've struggled with all showed up last night. There were only a couple of players that I thought had any jump at all. Philip Forsberg was one of them. So it was just disappointing. Now, it's only one game, and there's still a long way to go. And they're 3-1-1 in their last five. They weren't going to win every game after they lost the first five. They were 5-10 last year. I would venture to say there's a pretty decent chance their record is better than 5-10 in the next five games. They've just got to win two, and they would be better than they were last year after 15 games, and things turned out okay. So there's a ton of time to figure this out. But it's really mystifying as to why a lot of the guys just don't look like they're at their best. You can go down the list individually. I don't know if they're dealing with injuries that nobody's telling anybody about, not using it as an excuse or anything like that, but they're just not moving as well. But I think it's much more, and we're going to talk to Chris Mason about this. I still think it's team related. They're just not connected. It's used a million times, but you can see it when you're watching them. Completing passes, being ready to go right off the first faceoff. They had two or three chances to clear the puck, and it was like a bad dream. It was like a Halloween movie where you're having the bad dream. But like Alex Carrier got the puck right in front of his own net, chance to make a play. He puts it into space where he thinks somebody's going to be. Nobody's there. So they get the puck right back. He wins possession of the puck again. He skates up the boards. He runs into the referee, loses the puck, and the referee skates. The referee's there. There's nothing the ref can do about it. It's not the ref's fault. But that's a problem. So he gets it back. Then he gets upended from behind. I don't know if it was a trip or whatever. Puck turns over. Everybody is out of position, and it's a layup goal for Victor Arvidsson. So it was the worst possible start that you could have, and they just never got out of the funk. They did have a stretch in the second period, D-Mace, where it looked better. Stamkos hit the post.
But they still
again.
Was when I said that they were still in the game.
Oh, they're in the game.
The game was in reach.
Yeah. Their game was in reach, no question. And then
until Michael McCarron,
had another bad dream where he just falls down and hands the puck to
the worst
Leon
possible person
you
could,
for a breakaway. Yeah,
and Michael McCarron did not play for the rest of the game. He was benched the remainder of the game after that miscue.
The fourth line continues to be where they are hemorrhaging water into the boat, right? That you just can't be minus two every other game when you're the fourth line. Your job as the fourth liner is to be steady, if nothing else. So I feel for Michael McCarron. I've been in slumps. I get it. He's in a slump. Everything that can go wrong for him is going wrong. Nobody feels worse about it than him. The players on the team love him. He is the ultimate locker room guy, but he is struggling right now. And he's not alone.
By the way, Robbie Stanley says, it looks like the same lines for the Predators at practice today. So the lines they had last night against the Oilers, it looks like they'll have those lines again tomorrow against the Colorado Avalanche. Cam is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com with a Predators comment. Cam, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so I actually called to the show before you guys, and they took it as a joke, but I really wasn't being sarcastic. A friend of mine who I've been to probably 7 or 8 Preds games, and I've never missed a game with him. Last night he said, hey, look, I'm at the Preds game, and everybody's afraid of me. Everybody's running away from me. My costume has got this kid scared. And I was like, okay, what are you talking to? I'm a son of concept. And he was like, oh, and he sent me a picture, and it was just him in regular clothes. And he said, I'm a winner. that's the reason why everybody's afraid of me is because I'm a winner.
Thank you, Cam.
So just your friend in regular clothes, everybody's supposed to know he's a winner? Does it say?
It must have said winner.
Or,
it must have said I'm a winner.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie, Cam. That call made absolutely zero sense.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling. It made absolutely zero sense.
Call back if you want with something else. But I'm just thinking the guy had winner on his shirt, and then everybody else had on pray it, you know, pray gear or whatnot.
Yes.
And you was the lone guy that didn't have on a pray gear, so you was like, I'm a winner. I'm just trying to make sense out of it.
It would have been better if you had a Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Absolutely.
A Leon Draisaitl jersey with the Freddy Krueger gloves.
Yeah, that could have worked.
That could have worked.
But as I said, according to the Boston Globe, since 2013-14, when the NHL introduced its wild card playoff format, 14 of 176 teams that were at least 4 points out wound up making the playoffs, 4 points out on November 1st, I should say, wound up making the playoffs or just shy of 8%.
Okay, do you want my analysis of that stat?
Sure.
Okay, it's been 10 games, right? Of those 176 in the salary cap era, would we say roughly half are teams in the category of the San Jose Sharks and rebuilding teams, right, that really have very little
chance of making the playoffs over and over again. Basically.
At the start of the year. Is that fair to say? There's a big chunk of those.
That is part of it, yes.
And the Predators are not in that category. They have a lot more talent on paper than a lot of those 176 teams that did not make it.
And how many of them are repeat offenders? How many of those teams are repeat offenders?
This is 10 years of history here, so I don't...
That is a good question. Context is important.
Mm-hmm.
I brought this up when I brought up the stat about starting with 0 points through five games. Some of the teams that started without those points were teams that were not expected to compete. The Predators are a team that is expected to compete. So you would hope that they would turn it around.
Well, they should do a study on the teams that are expected to compete based upon their roster. How many of those teams started off, you know, 4 points behind on November 1st? How many of those teams end up making the playoffs?
That's a good question.
I'm just a believer that by the end of the 82nd game, you're going to be what you are. And there is no doubt in my mind that this team is way better than it is played. You go right down the list. If you interviewed every single player one by one in a room and said, how do you think you've played so far? I guarantee you they'd say, I've stunk. I've not been good enough, with maybe just a couple exceptions, but they know they can be better. They have it in them, so there's time. I'm not worried about that stat, especially after last year they were 5-10 and they didn't have nearly the talent they have on this team. Now, do they have problems? Yes, and some of the things that we pointed out, Adam, before the season started. What about the number two center? What about the number three center? What about the young players? What about Stamkos at 5-on-5? All of these things are rearing themselves. They are turning out to be questions that are not answered right now. And that is the important thing to me. It is not, hey, give me the number of teams that have been 3-5-1.
I'm just trying to provide historical context.
They're 3-6-1. They're not 1-9. They're 3-6-1 and 4 points out. You could be 4 points out with 3 weeks to play and make the playoffs. So I'm not worried about that. I am concerned. And let me be clear. I'm not being Mr. Positive here. After last night, they did not take any more steps forward. I think that looked like a team that, you know, games like that happen. You just lay an egg. They laid an egg last night. It was terrible. And they know it. What was disappointing is they had gone on a little bit of a run where they come out of a three-game and four-night stretch where they scratch and claw and compete and dig out of holes to go 2-0-1 with the opportunity to say, you know what, we still didn't play that great, but we found a way. So let's keep getting better. And instead, they took a big step back, and it looked like a worse version of the team that was 0-5, where they not even within the game did they put together a stretch where they looked inspired and we're going to find a way to get something to happen. So that was mystifying to me last night. So That's where I'm at on that. I can probably circle three or four Predator teams that were 4 points out at least by November 1st or by Thanksgiving that recovered and had fine seasons and made the playoffs. So I think it's – I'm not as much into the Elliott stat as he maybe is because of what I said before. A lot of those teams that make up the percentage mm-hmm. are teams that really weren't going to make it from the get-go.
Yeah, you knew they were bad anyway at the beginning of the season.
Quickly, Adam in Portland is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, go ahead.
Yeah, so what are the chances, and I'm not trying to be a jerk by saying this, what are the chances that this team just isn't very good? Like, period, like the old guys, Adrian Peterson's a Hall of Fame running back. He was amazing, but not as a Titan. It already passed, like, what, is Steven Stamkos the same guy? Is there a reason they didn't make him a precedent to re-sign him? Is Marchessault, is there a reason people weren't lining up for Marchessault? Like,
They were lining up for those guys, but Adam, your point is well taken.
Thank you, Adam.
This is what they have to wear. Adam, I'm going to answer your question because you're right. Until they answer those questions, mm-hmm. people are going to ask the question.
Yeah,
and they know it. They're pros. They know how this works, right? They know it. Not everybody's going to pat them on the back and say, mm-hmm. "Hey, nice try last night, guys." I know it just wasn't your night. It was Halloween, whatever. They know that they're in a hole, and they've got to answer these questions. And I hope that drives them to become better, and I'm confident that it will. But I don't believe that's the case, that they're just not very good. Mm-hmm. But they do have flaws, and I think in a salary cap especially, and D-Mace, I think you can think of NFL teams, when the parity is what it is mm-hmm. in the salary cap, the question is, can you overcome your flaws, right? Every team's got some flaws, even teams that will eventually win. Edmonton and Florida had flaws last year. Edmonton started off 2-8-1. They almost won the whole thing. They had flaws. But in the end, over 82 games, the strengths outweigh the flaws. Right now, the flaws are rearing themselves because what should be strengths are not overcoming that and not even close.
615-737-1025. We've got calls and texts to get to about the Predators, who lose 5-1 last night to the Edmonton Oilers, dropping their record to 3-6-1 on the season. We will get to those next. But before we do, it is my duty to tell you to tune into 94.9 The Fan tomorrow at 2:30 for our college football game of the week, Florida versus Georgia, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. D-Mace, Vin Ginnendonick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen talking Nashville Predators, who fall 5-1 last night to the Edmonton Oilers. Bicycle Boy is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Good morning, fellas. First call this season. And I have waited until I felt like I had a decent sample size. Here's my question. Bruno's system, from what I understand, has been to play fast, dog the puck on the forecheck and the backcheck, you know, break some ankles on those puck battles in the corners. Is it time for Bruno to consider maybe tweaking the system to suit more of the new talent that we have, especially the speed part? So far this year, and I haven't been in town to be able to catch a game yet, but we don't look like a real fast team. So I'm wondering, does Bruno tweak the system to kind of fit more of the strengths of not just our new talent, but the whole team as a whole?
Thank you, Bicycle Boy. I that's a good question.
It is. It's a very good question.
So yesterday, as part of my responsibilities with Sportsnet.ca, I filled in for Mark Spector, who normally covers the Oilers, when they were here yesterday. So at the beginning of the show, I was down in the Oilers dressing room, and Chris Knobloch, their coach, was talking about something quite similar, because their team speed, and Elliot talked about this with us yesterday, yes. mm-hmm. that the Oilers look a little slow, and the Oilers are not thought to be a slow team. Connor McDavid might be the fastest skater in the league. Obviously, he did not play last night. But Chris Knobloch mentioned that it's not just actual foot speed, like the miles per hour you skate. It's about cohesion with the puck and moving the puck cleanly from player to player. And he thought that the Oilers' struggles this season were in part because there was that disconnect as they were moving the puck up the ice. And I think the same can be said for what the Predators are experiencing so far this season. As for whether or not Andrew Brunette should change his system, it's a good question. I'm wondering how complicated that would be and the trickle-down effect of making those tweaks.
I don't think it's a necessary wholesale change. You may have to tweak some things. You know, because Bruno said this last year when he took the job, we want to be a faster team. And it's not all about just ice skating, like skating. We're not just talking about skating. Yes, we want to be fast skating, but we also want to be fast in regards to moving the puck, getting the puck up the ice,
yes,
getting the puck from side to side. That to us is moving, moving fast. It doesn't necessarily mean foot speed. It means getting the puck up the ice, knowing what you have up the ice, knowing the construct of the play, and getting it where it needs to be gotten quickly and not holding on to the puck. So, the caller, that's a good question. And Bruno could do it, but I don't think it would be a drastic change from what he's doing now. He has to almost taper it down a little bit considering – who's on ice? They're not a fast team when you're talking skating.
The two marquee free agents they signed
are older guys
who have really never been known
exactly
for being fast
speedsters.
Skaters.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it's all about getting the puck up the ice quickly, not necessarily, skating with the puck.
Smart
and getting
passes.
It up. Exactly.
Connecting on those passes. That's important, too.
I would circle that as the number one problem that they've had through 10 games mm-hmm. is that exact thing, is the ability to pass with precision up the ice using the system. So, and when you're doing that, you are playing fast. It's a really good question to ask. My answer, if I were sitting there in the room trying to talk this through, I would say, look, there's too many guys that were there last year that are also not connected right now. So why is that? So there's no reason that should be. They know the system. They've played in Brunette's system, which is trickier. So the three or four new guys that they have, you can understand why they wouldn't be connected. So I think Andrew Brunette will double down and just give it some more time to work itself out. So I think that they will do that. But I do think that is the number one thing bogging them down. There is, if there are five guys, and I think you would say this too, D-Mace, mm-hmm. if for 11 guys on an offensive play, it just takes one guy to not do the job, and the whole play can fall back. I think that can happen with the system too. If all five guys aren't on the same page and one guy's not in the right spot, it could be a really bad turnover that turns into a two-on-one or a breakaway, and that has happened to them a ton. They are, I think, 30th out of 32 teams in allowing odd man rushes. They got burned on two breakaways last night. And that is not uncommon with what's been happening when they've lost. When they have the breakdown, it's turning into a golden opportunity that the other team is getting. And when that happens, there's a little bit of a, well, where were you? Like, I thought you were over here, and the puck was supposed to go over here. There's just, maybe it was just one guy that was a step late, and they're trying to play so fast. It involves trust. It involves timing. And I did see it get way, way better over the course of the season last year.
One thing as well that plays into all of this, and this is something we've mentioned before, the amount of time that the Predators have spent playing from behind. When you are playing from behind, you may cheat your system a little bit in order to get back into the game
yes.
and take risks that you wouldn't normally take because you're trying to score. I asked the NHL for this information this morning. I found this to be quite interesting. In terms of total playing time, the Predators have spent 53.6% of their total playing time trailing by any measure, by one goal, by two goals, by three goals. They have spent 53.6% of their total playing time trailing, which is the largest percentage in the NHL. They have spent more time playing from behind in terms of their percentage of their total game time than any other team in the league.
Right, and that's the kind of number of an overmatched team, that the kind that we're talking about talent-wise, that, you know, just goes in. You see it in plenty of leagues. You walk out and you're like, this team doesn't have nearly the firepower the other team is, and it stands to reason you would be behind. But this team doesn't lack firepower. There's no reason on paper that should be happening.
Cam has called back in on our phone line, driven by Wilson County.
Cam, this better be good, Cam.
Cam, we're giving you a second chance. We don't normally do this. We're giving you a second shot here, Cam. Please go ahead.
I mean, come on.
Okay, please hang up on Cam. I don't know if he was actually
sleeping.
Did he fall back asleep? Was he actually sleeping, or was he telling us something?
What's happening?
Are we boring you, Cam?
What's going on here? I mean, are we into another day of Halloween? Did they extend Halloween or something? He just called and he was on hold maybe a couple of minutes, and he started. So we put him on air and he starts snoring. Yeah.
Well, there's that great promo for Chase and Big Joe show where the guy is snoring.
I'm not gonna buy that one. I'm not gonna buy that.
All right, Cam. That was your second chance, my friend. You're going to have to regain our trust in order to call back in.
Yeah.
But.
So text in from now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when you wake up and you hear this, let us know. But, you know, Willie, the other thing we talked about it on Preds Insiders this week. We've talked about it on this show many times. You know, that second line has still been unable to find its footing. And one of the biggest questions surrounding this team entering the season is, do they have enough center depth? There I go. Enough center depth to compete with the upper echelon teams in the Western Conference and in the NHL. The Predators put a lot on Tommy Novak's plate, and so far he has been unable to deliver consistently. And Colton Sissons has been skating alongside Steven Stamkos. It's been, you know, if there's a reason to be concerned about the Predators, there might be many reasons, but perhaps the primary reason so far is that it appears that the Predators' plan at center has not worked out so far. And I'm curious.
I would circle that as the number two problem, right behind the overall lack of connectivity, cohesiveness that we just talked about with the system. Right, that would be number one. And it's related, but number two would be exactly that. Here's how I would answer that.
Sure.
It's one thing to say Tommy Novak hasn't taken a big step forward and seized the opportunity, and now the numbers are way better with these guys he's playing with. Or same with Colton Sissons. And then you can even add Michael McCarron. Those are the three guys that we're talking about, right? Those are the guys that are playing center.
Ryan O'Reilly.
Yeah, Ryan O'Reilly has been himself. I think Ryan O'Reilly, maybe not. He probably would nitpick some things. I think he's played well. The other three guys, they haven't played to their capability from what is expected of them. Colton Sissons is usually a super reliable guy that helps you win, even if he's not scoring a lot of goals. But he is a guy that should be chipping in an occasional goal here. He hasn't been that. Is he -9, something like that? Colton Sissons has not been even just Colton Sissons, right? Just be yourself. You don't have to turn into some 25 or 30 goal scorer. But Colton Sissons hasn't been the version of himself that has been that really steady force for a long, long time. So I'm not sure why that is. And I would say the same thing about Novak. He's not even playing as well as he did the last couple of years, right? Just give me the Tommy Novak that earned that contract last year, and I'll take my chances. Let's worry about the other stuff, later. But just be who you are. Same thing with Michael McCarron. He has regressed from what he has been not just last year, but the year before. All three of those guys, I think, would be in the category of slumping and not just aren't better than – just be who you are is what I'm getting at. Be yourself.
Be yourself.
Yeah.
I learned that in elementary school.
Is that fair?
School.
Am I wrong about that?
No. Like,
they are tracking well below their overall
Colton
baseline
Sissons,
game.
By the way. Plus minus is a far from perfect statistic. Colton Sissons, 10 games this season, 0 points. He is a minus 12, which is tied with Kirby Dach of the Montreal Canadiens forward for the worst plus minus in the NHL.
Right. And I would imagine a few of those are empty net goals where he's
yes.
on there.
Yes.
But the point is, he's not playing like Colton Sissons can play. And he would be the first to tell you that. And I think Tommy Novak would, and I know Michael McCarron would. This is where it's, I think collectively, it's just give me what you are, what you have been,
yeah.
and I'll take the results. But they're below, and we can go on and on. It's not just those guys at center. There's plenty of them that just aren't playing. Roman Josi, I think, would tell you as the captain, he's not himself right now for some reason.
615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Predators with Chris Mason at noon. But first, we heard from Will Levis. Yesterday, some interesting comments from Will Levis that we will get into next. But before that, tune into 102.5, 106.3 The Game tomorrow for Vanderbilt football. The Commodores will take on Auburn with pregame beginning at 10 and kickoff at 11:45. Coverage is also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. D-Mace, Vinginen, Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. The Tennessee Titans are back in action on Sunday against the New England Patriots. Should be a entertaining game. The league's two worst passing offenses going head to head. Who could be slightly less worse? Not who could be better. Who will be slightly less worse? The 31st and 32nd ranked passing offenses, the Patriots and the Titans. Been speaking
of 32.
What is it?
Battle for 32.
Yes. Speaking of passing, we heard from Will Levis yesterday. He's returned to practice. He was a limited participant on Wednesday. I assume he was a limited participant yesterday. I did not see the injury report. But Will Levis addressed reporters after practice, and it certainly sounds like the decision on whether or not he is going to play on Sunday is being left in his hands. This is what Will Levis said after practice yesterday.
Do you feel like it is your decision?
Yeah, no, it is. I think that it's hard for me to make that decision for myself. Obviously, with going and playing against Indy, and that in retrospect not being the best decision of not stepping up and saying something. But it is. Coach has just made it very clear to me that I need to be honest with how I'm feeling. So that, you know, the right decision can be made.
That was Will Levis yesterday. And by the way, he was also a limited participant in practice yesterday with that right shoulder injury. So no telling who will start for the Tennessee Titans, whether it will be Will Levis or Mason Rudolph. But it sounds like the Titans coaching staff is going to trust Will Levis to make that decision. Are they right to trust Will Levis to make that decision?
I think at this point, you have to, because what you may want may not be what's necessarily best for the quarterback in regards to, you know, should we sit him out another week? He's not hurt. He was hurt. But do we sit him out another week to make sure we don't have any more problems? Well, that's trying to protect the player from himself. But this particular player needs to get out on the field as quickly as possible. He does, because the longer he sits and watch, the worse it gets, the more he doubts himself as a player. Yeah, you can sit back and watch and say all the nice things about, you know, now I'm able to see it from a different perspective. I'm looking at it from a 20,000 feet view, so I see everything. That's good to say, but when you're not in there, it's like, man, when will I get my chance again? You know, basically it's on them whether I'm going to get back in the game or not. That's why I said let it be on the quarterback, because now once he's decided that he's ready to go, there's no more excuses. I don't want to hear, and Willie said this off air, I don't want to hear, if you say you're ready now, I don't want to hear at the end of the game, well, my arm was feeling a little fatigued. And no, you said you can go. You went through the practices. You made the throws again. You said you can go. So why does this keep coming up? He needs a win so bad right now, meaning Will Levis. The Titans need a win too. But I'm saying he, as an individual, he needs a win. He needs a notch on his belt because it's confidence is waning right now. You can say he got, you know, you can say they set him because he was hurt. And no, I'm not going to buy that one. Not all the way. You set him because you wanted him an opportunity. It gave you a reason to bench him. I think it was another reason to bench him, send him on the side and say, hey, listen, we're doing this because he's hurt. Wink, wink. Sit on the side and watch what's going on. So when you're ready, you have no more excuses. But he needs this win in the worst way right now.
And the timing of that decision probably couldn't have been any better.
Exactly.
Imagine if Will Levis would have started against the Bills and the Lions, and the games would have played out the exact same way. I can only imagine what the Will Levis discourse would be. They may have saved him from himself by not having him play in those two games in particular.
So you're saying that Mason Rudolph was thrown to the Lions?
And the Bills, the Buffalo.
He was trampled by the Bills.
And thrown in a cage with the Lions.
Yes. I see your point.
A real-life Daniel.
Yes, exactly.
To reiterate, I would say if I'm Brian Callahan, I am absolutely having that conversation with Will Levis and just say, look, if you give me – and Brian Callahan has to see that he's making the throws in practice,
yes,
which is what he said he saw before the Colts game, that it looked like he was making the throws and there were not limitations. Now, I don't know if they had a conversation or not that is similar to the one that I would make sure I had this time. I do not want to hear one thing about, well, I couldn't make that throw because my arm was sore. Either you're in or you're out. And that has to be something they learn from the past on. I wonder, too, it is an opponent that on
it's
paper
beatable.
You should have some more success against, right? And Mason Rudolph is probably saying, you know, I did okay when we were playing the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. I might look a little bit better against the Patriots than I did against the Lions or the Bills. But at the same time, I think we have seen enough of Mason Rudolph to see the limitations of what he is as a quarterback. He's a steady pro that understands the offense, understands football, reads defenses pretty well, but is limited physically, right?
Yes.
He doesn't have a super rocket of an arm or anything like that. If not, then he would be starting for somebody. But he's limited. So maybe that takes a little pressure off of Will Levis. Maybe. And maybe Will Levis, having gotten off the ride for a couple weeks, regrouped. There's less pressure because the team isn't going anywhere. Maybe there's an opportunity for him to be looser and play better.
Okay.
I'm just theorizing here.
I don't know
if that's going to be the case. But if you can't play well when the pressure's off, then you can't play, period, right?
I liken it to a boxer, in a sense. Let's just say Mike Tyson. We know Mike Tyson's story, obviously. He had been out of boxing. We know why he was out of boxing for a while. When he came back, they didn't just throw him in there with the top-ranked opponent. They didn't just throw him in there with a guy that has been just destroying, you know, the heavyweight. No, they said
they gave him a cupcake.
Yeah, we need to build you back up. We need to give you a cupcake. We need to give you a few of them to get you going again. Not that we don't believe you're still a good fighter, but we can't just throw you in there to the wolves and expect you to hold your own. You've been out of boxing for over 2 years. It's the same with Will Levis. You've been out a couple of weeks. Maybe it was done on purpose, considering the opponent. But when we want to put you back in, we're not going to throw you back in the game when we're about to play the Houston Texans or we're about to play one of these other heavyweights that is left on our schedule. We're not going to do that. We're going to throw you in there with a team that's more compatible to us. a team that's struggling just like we're struggling. But if you look at the rosters, we're a little bit better than them. So, Will, we're going to put you in. We're going to allow you to make this decision. You're going to make the decision to play because you know if you don't make the decision to play this week, it's not looking rosy after that. So you make the decision to play, and you go out there and just win this game. It's not a cupcake because I don't think NFL games run. They don't go that way where even a bad team is a cupcake.
There are no cupcakes.
Yeah, exactly.
The Patriots are looking at this game. We have a chance to
win. Exactly. The Patriots are looking at it the same way.
It's an opportunity for them to have a winning streak. Exactly.
So this is a game that Will Levis needs to quarterback, and this is a game that he needs to win. And not just win, he needs to have a good performance. He needs to be the reason why they won, not him just being a quarterback underneath center. He needs to be the reason they won, like he was the reason they won versus Atlanta, like he was the reason they won versus Miami. He needs to be the reason they win this game, at least to me.
Trey is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, with a comment on Will Levis. Trey, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good, thank you.
Hey, in my personal opinion, I believe Will Levis is trying so hard to get another contract that he'll do whatever to do it. You know, he'll jeopardize his career to go out there and try to win, which I don't think he has the tools to win. I really don't. You know, it's almost a year. He hasn't even won in a year. And they're going to keep putting him out there like that? What do y'all think? Do y'all think?
Well, his contract, Trey, I would say, the only thing I would say.
Thank you, Trey.
To your comment about the contract. Mm-hmm. His contract is pretty set all the way through next year. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, if he were a free agent coming up at the end of the season, I could see that. I just don't think it's about the contract. He's just got to prove he can play. If he's thinking about the contract, that's off.
I'm sure, you know, because listen, you only have realistically, you only have one shot at this. Maybe two. Typically, the second shot comes to those that were high draft picks. They usually get that second shot, meaning first-round guys, top 10, top 15 picks. You look at them, Darnold, Baker Mayfield, those guys. Because they were high picks, they got second chances and third chances. Will Levis, you were not a top 32 pick or 31 pick. This may be your last opportunity. And the caller's right. He hadn't won a game all year. He has not won a game in a year. The last game he played last year, he did not win. And he hasn't won a game this year where he's been underneath center. Mason Rudolph won that game in Miami for them. Not Will Levis. So Will Levis is over right now. That's why I said he needs a win more than anybody.
615-737-1025. We will get back into the Titans in the second hour, but first we will talk with our friend Chris Mason and continue our conversation about the struggling Nashville Predators. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.